Sports Day for Kia. The all-new Kia Sportage has been unleashed. And Red Energy, awarded Canstar's most trusted retailer nationally for 2021.
Oh my word! What an unbelievable goal from Sam Kerr! World class!
Riding with Tudas! Set the tone for Ange and Celtic.
Sixers have had a great night and finish it. Christian takes the catch. And the Melbourne Stars have been absolutely destroyed by the Sydney Sixers.
The 2021 Repco Bathurst 1000 winner is Chaz Mostert.
Oh, they touched and they collided. Max Verstappen and Lewis Hamilton. How much damage on Hamilton's Mercedes? What has happened there?
7 minutes past six. Hello, welcome along to Sports Day. There's some of the highlights of another great weekend in sport. It was a huge weekend for motorsport with both Formula One and Bathurst. Sam Kerr put on a clinic. The Demons had a huge premiership celebration and looking forward to another one next year. Disappointing, though, to say the least, Scoop, for the Stars. But there was so much more, and you'll get your chance to give us your thoughts. Later in the show, we'll open up the lines and we'll take your calls in on the Harcourts open line. 133-693 is the number. And we have some urban myth to give away. Zero alcohol beer to the best caller. But Scoop, let's begin by chatting about rugby league.
Absolutely, Jared. Specifically the Melbourne Storm, who I think, you know, for a long time, 133-693, by the way, if you want to have your say, have been the poster boys for the correct behaviour.
Yep.
For being
almost an unblemished record, haven't they?
Well, yeah, for being really the pinnacle of professionalism. Now, Frank Panisi, a lot of our listeners know, good friend of this show, he has not spoken anywhere about the situation surrounding Brandon Smith, who tomorrow goes into pre-season for day one. It's going to be a pretty tough day for him. And this is a club that, you know, we're not used to speaking about in this light, Jared. Prior to the white powder scandal, which was only a couple of months ago, there were never any issues like this for the Melbourne Storm.
No, we usually talk about them in glowing terms. It's not often we begin with rugby league, but as you said, the first time that Frank has been good enough to join us, we thought we'd elevate it to the top of the program. Frank, welcome to you. It's not often that we speak negatively of your club, but that's the situation you're in. Welcome to you.
No, thanks, Jared. Thanks, Sam. We understand that, and it's pretty hard to defend a lot of those things too. I mean, obviously, we love when we get all the accolades and all the pats on the back that come our way, and which we've obviously received a fair few over the years. But when it's time not to get the brickbats, we've just got to put the helmets on and take them, and more importantly, got to do something about it going forward.
Yes, and you've always been able to do that, respond with winning, and people have written you off forever. But right now, you've lost three absolute stars. And Brandon Smith, I'm not sure how he's going to perform. He's put himself in the spotlight unnecessarily. I mean, he's really, in my view, put his whole future at the club. And I'm talking short term. I know long term he's not there anyway. But it must have been so close to giving him his marching orders. Have you still settled on the fact that you're going to bring him back into the fold? Or has he still got to earn his right to become one of the Storm players again for next year?
Yeah, look, he starts officially back again tomorrow. It's our last group that's start training. We've had the groups come in three. The new player started about a month ago. Our younger group, or our less and more experienced of our 2021 squad, started 2 weeks ago, and then the remainder, which Brandon's part of, starts tomorrow. So it all starts for him tomorrow. They certainly used the word regain. There's whether you call it respect or trust or whatever the word is, there's obviously some work to be done by Brandon, and only Brandon can do that. Not just through words but through actions. So, yeah, he's got some work to do, and it all starts tomorrow for him.
We all make mistakes, and podcasts seem to bring out the worst in a lot of people. They get a bit loose and talking with mates, etc., and want to talk it up and have a bit of a joke. But ultimately, you've had to acknowledge what he said, the drinking culture, etc. It's how did you deal with that, and clearly how are you dealing with the public, with us now, with this allegation of the big drinking culture?
Yeah, look, the podcast as a whole found disappointing, but I found the drinking culture puzzling. I think you only have to look at our record over the last 7 years. We've made seven consecutive prelims. you know, I think four minor premierships, four grand finals, two premierships. We won 19 games on the bounce this year. You don't have those performances over a long period of time if you've got a drinking culture.
Yep.
If you did, I think there'd be a lot of sporting teams in Australia that would be suddenly adopting a drinking culture. So I found those comments puzzling. It's impossible. And I think anyone that's got any type of knowledge of physical performance and you know, the constant use of alcohol, tell you, they just don't go together.
Was it personally disappointing for you and Craig, Frank? Because this kid has been one of you for a long, long time and essentially he's thrown you under the bus.
Well, you're disappointed because you care about someone and someone that has contributed enormously to the club. So I think if it was just a bloke that just flew in, flew out, you wouldn't really give too much thought to it. But it's someone that's been here for 5 years, came as a young player, made his debut here and has given his absolutely all to the club and really contributed, you know. And so that made it disappointing. And look, I haven't heard the podcast, and those type of podcasts, not my go, to be honest. Not just because of this, they're just not my go, those type of podcasts that are done these days. You know, and people tell me that he did say a lot of good things about the club, which is fantastic. But unfortunately, as I've explained to him, you know,
they don't get publicised.
People, they're not worried about the 95% good things he said. They'll focus purely on the 5%, and the 5% of things he shouldn't have said, and he regrets saying them now.
How close did you get to sacking him?
Oh, look, that discussion is, you know, obviously there's just been disappointment. There's a lot of speculation going around, crazy speculation over the weekend about swapping and those type of things. Ultimately, we just let it ride, just clear our emotions, and then waited for Brandon to come back. So Brandon, as I said, just arrived back into Melbourne over the weekend, and he starts officially tomorrow, and then we'll have a chat. He's contracted to the club, and, you know, if he really wants to be here and, you know, and he can show that he wants to be here, you know, that this is where his future will be. So, but, you know, as I said, it's easy just having one or two meetings. He's got a shout over a period of time. So, but there was a lot of disappointed people, and thankfully, no more disappointed than himself for the comments that he made.
So are you refuting that you approached West Tigers to do a swap?
We didn't approach. No, we can't. I can guarantee we approach no club. No, like certainly, when you're in that position, you become you know, as we are, as people think you're vulnerable. So obviously, you will get potentially other clubs contacted. But yeah, some of the, you know, there's again, it's we just got to take a deep breath. It's been a very, very disappointing week on top of a few other things. So we've just got to take a breath, sit down with the player in person rather than over the phone or by text, and have a conversation with him. But, you know, as I said, he's a contracted player and he'll be given an opportunity to show that he really wants to be here.
Given how long you've been involved with this footy club, do you think that the awe of the Melbourne Storm has been impacted by the last few months? Has the gloss gone off the club a little bit? I mean, you've dealt with some pretty serious circumstances. You've had a white powder scandal involving some of your stars, and then one of those stars opens up about, you know, an alleged drinking culture, and he says he was taken out of context. I've listened back. That's what he said. How big an impact do you think, Frank, this has had?
Oh, look, it's something we don't like, and we generally care about the culture. You know, it's been built. You know, cultures aren't built overnight, and built over a season. It takes years and years to build great cultures, and, you know, and this has been built over a long period of time. So, you know, there's a lot of people that have been here in a long time, you know, no longer than Craig. And, you know, I've been, this is my 15th season. We've got a lot of other staff similar that we generally care, and our players as well. I think, you know, they generally care about the culture. So what you'll find, Sam, is an extremely determined group that have basically, you know, seen that we've taken a whack and it hurts, and we care about it. So, you know, whether we've lost our aura, I'm not too sure. All we care about is our culture is restored to where it should be, our high standards and our values that we have. So, yeah, we're certainly not throwing the white flag. If anything, I think you're going to see an extremely determined club, not just on the field, because I'm pretty confident on the field, but, you know, it's off the field too. I think that's the most important thing. I think that's the area we've got to improve in lots of areas, and we're determined to get back to where we know we belong.
So on a positive, couple of new players, in fact, three new players heading to the club and starting training this week, including Xavier Coates, who's a hell of a player.
He's been exceptionally outstanding during pre-season. He's been here a month now, as all the new players have, and he's training incredibly well. He's you know, leading the pace. Nick Meaney that we signed from the Bulldogs, you know, as a replacement for Nico Hines. Again, he fitted in really well, and he's a little bit older too, so his experience is quite invaluable. Josh King from the Knights, a player that'll, you know, will play similar to Dale Finucane, and by no means we're even thinking of comparing it to Dale, but he's added some real energy. And we've got a couple of young players, the Torren Wishart that we got midway through the last year, who's joined our squad for that but didn't play. He's probably one of our best at training at the moment. And a young kid called Jack Howarth, who was also in our system last year, but just with COVID, got little opportunities. So he'll... They've probably been the standouts, but it's there's what that's, you know, with all the distractions going on, one thing we're really pleased is how the group hasn't been distracted. Their on-field performance has been outstanding. The high standards, as good as I've ever seen it at training. I saw a session on Saturday, which was as tough a session I've seen for a long time. And, you know, they were outstanding. They did everything and beyond. So, yeah, where we are right now, we welcome all the boys back tomorrow. And, you know, so far it's been from a on-field point of view, Jared, it's been a very successful on-field. We just got to fix up the off-field issues.
Well, Frank, I'm not sure we'll talk again on air between now and Christmas, but I'm looking forward to catching up with you at Tommy Ruff's in the next couple of weeks. You've been fantastic for us all year. Good luck and have a great break. All the best.
Thanks, Jared. Thanks, Sam. Thanks for your support during the year. Really appreciate it.
Frank Panisi, the godfather of the Melbourne Storm. Your calls after this.
I think when I saw him, he's obviously shattered with what's happened, because he's been such an exemplary figure in Australian cricket for the last 4 years particularly. You know, his life's changed, obviously. So, but you have to ask him how he's going. All I know is important to go and see him. We talk about looking after our boys, having each other's backs, and it was a no-brainer for me to go and see him.
Well, there's Justin Langer telling us he went and had a chat to Tim Payne, and I cannot believe, Scoop, that he's copped heat over that action, that decision to go and see somebody who is clearly...
Who criticised that?
General criticism.
Was there?
I think across the Twitter sphere going to have a chat to him. But this is Sports Day. We're powered by Red Energy. And of course,
he's going to go see the guy that was captain of the team for so long.
Kia, the all-new Kia range is available now. Brendan Julian, Chief of Fox Sports cricket coverage, not far away from joining us. Guy's been holding on the longest. So kick us off, Guy. You want to talk about the Ashes?
Yeah, g'day, guys. Am I missing something? Because I can't understand why they've cancelled this Perth test. Why couldn't they just play that as the first test?
Well,
they come in from England, do their quarantine, and then play the game.
Yeah, well, I think that ultimately was what the Emperor tried to orchestrate, and that's a swap for the second test, because they would have been coming out of Queensland, wouldn't have had to quarantine, etc. But unfortunately... it's not quite as simple as that. I thought it was creative from Mark McGowan, but the Sacker poo-pooed that one pretty quickly. Ultimately, it was in his court. He held sway, and ultimately, I think it's fair to say, Scoopy was...
You and I have been saying on this program...
He jumped before he was pushed.
For at least 3 weeks that the Perth test was never going to happen, even when they were confident. Brendan Julian is the main man at Fox Cricket. He's been good enough to join us. He can catch every ball of the Ashes live. It is ad break free. You can stream it on KO. You can also watch it in 4K Ultra HD on Foxtel, which is what I like doing, Jared. And Brendan's on the line. Welcome, Brendan.
G'day, boys. How are you?
We're going well. How good are you at the weather? Just looking down the temperature list, it looks fantastic. 29, 30, 29, 28, and climaxing the final day of 27. The only problem is 70%, 60%, 50%, 60%, 50% chance of a shower. Are we going to get a result, Brendan?
I reckon you will get a result. I mean, if there's a little bit of grass on the pitch and it's sort of swinging around a bit, I reckon the big decision is going to be with Pat Cummins being the bowler and captain now. If he senses a bit of twinge or a bit of tweak in the pitch, he may want to bowl first. I mean, normally, 9 times out of 10, you win the toss, you bat first. That's what batsmen normally do. But I tell you what, if he gets an inkling or there's a delayed start, there's a bit of weather around and it's grassy, you might want to put him in if you win the toss.
Would you?
Don't know. I'd need to be. You'd make that decision about half an hour before you toss the coin.
As a bowler, you would have stuck him. You see a little bit of green grass on that. You'd want to get hold of the new Kookaburra.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Also, I don't reckon it's a bad thing either, because I tell you what, it's up against England's top three, which are pretty ordinary, I reckon. I mean, Joe Root moving down towards the middle of the order is pretty good. Ben Stokes and Josh Butler and Bairstow. But their top order is shabby. So I don't know. I reckon he'll be thinking about it. But what happens is, if they get in there and they bat well on the first day, then you normally cop it as a bowler. But I think it'd be a brave move. Not everyone has always won the toss and batted first. But if there's a bit of grass on it, you might want to do it.
It is a big call for a first-up captain with his first call. If he wins, I reckon he'd almost prefer to lose the toss.
What did Chappelle used to say?
Yeah.
9 times out of 10, you bat. And the 10th time, you think about bowling.
And still bat.
And you still bat.
But don't forget, Chappelle in 1974 always said that. And he bowled first in the first two test matches at the Gabba, then Perth. So, you know, he has got the history
selective memory,
first.
Okay.
He can do it. Exactly. Hey,
Brendan, how much has the tide turned from, say, 2 months ago when we were all sitting here thinking, oh, well, this should be a nice, easy roll over 3 or 4-0 against England? A fair bit's changed since then.
Mate, you're absolutely right, mate. I mean, one, we've flicked their captain, so that changes it all around a bit, which I don't necessarily think is going to have a massive impact on the side. Yes, you don't want to lose your captain, I agree, but I don't think I think Ben Stokes coming out to England, I think that has turned it around significantly for England. I think their bowling is really solid with Anderson and Broad. I think their only issue is probably the top three batsmen. But I definitely think we will go on as favourites, but it won't be a walkover. No doubt about that. It'll be a lot closer than what we think.
Did they make the right call with Travis Head over Usman Khawaja?
Look, I think they did. I think they had to give him some sort of opportunity to at least prove himself. I mean, look, he averages 40 in Test cricket and probably 27 in the last series against England. I don't think he's a lock-in for the whole series, but he will have to bat well. But I think he deserves that run. Uzi has had his chances as well, and he's had his chances to lock in his spot, and he hasn't done that. He's batted well in the Sheffield Shield, so I'm happy with that decision. I don't think, it's a lock-in for the whole five test matches, but certainly for the first two.
Brendan Julian joining us from Fox Cricket ahead of the Ashes. BJ, is Shane Warne's criticism of Mitchell Stark warranted?
Yeah, I think it's a bit tough. I mean, Warney always believes that probably Mitch Stark has not sort of lived up to those expectations. But I'm all for having Mitch Stark in the first test match. I want to see how he's going. I don't think he's bowling that poorly. Yes, I know there are times when he sprays it around and he looks ordinary, but he's that type of bowler. You know, he's that type of bowler that can win you games and then he can go for 60 or 5 overs. So I don't mind that. Being a left armer myself, you cop it a bit if you spray it around, but, you know, if he's on song, he can win you a test match. So I'm happy to see that for the first couple of test matches, no doubt.
West Australia has lost the test match, the deciding test match. Where should it go?
I'd love it to come to Melbourne, to be honest. I'd love it to be a day-nighter in Melbourne. I understand Tasmania want the test match down there, but you're not going to get the crowd down there compared to Melbourne. You're not going to get the financial revenue that Cricket Australia desperately need. Look, I love Tasmania. I love all the people down there, but I would love it to go back to Melbourne for a day-nighter, and hopefully if it was a decider. I just think that Melbourne deserve that. You know, they've been deprived of a lot of sport. They've been crucified in the AFL. I think it's the home of cricket, the MCG, and I would love it to be there. So that would be my vote. I just think the people in Melbourne would support it even after a Boxing Day test match.
What odds, Jared? Framing the market, who's favourite?
I reckon 70% for us, 30% for Tasmania, and 0%,
yeah, that's good.
0% for GMHBA, even though Prime Ministerial candidate Richard Miles, he's called for it to go to Geelong. Trouble is he didn't check with the CEO of the ground, who said, we can't do it. We've got renovations to our stadium.
I reckon Tasmania, $1.40 favourite.
Do you? Where do you come from?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a bit closer than what we think. I don't think it's done and dusted all in Melbourne. I think at this stage, Tassie, the government have got it behind it. I know they're throwing a bit of money at it as well. They lost the Afghanistan test match. So yeah. I think they're in front at the moment.
I reckon.
Where would the broadcasters like to have it? Surely the day-nighters,
Melbourne,
are much more attractive than a half-full stadium down in Tassie.
Well, that's what I do. And weather's always a problem. I mean, you don't want it to be sort of washed out down to Tasmania. Not that it can't be washed out in Melbourne, but I just think visually it would look great. And the first time you've got a day-night test match in Melbourne, I think the people would get out and support it. I think you'd get 40, 50,000 people there, no problem. We're down in Tassie at night time. It could be a lot colder. You're not too sure about it. So, yeah, that's my gut feeling.
The one thing we do know, if they do get the Ashes test, and good luck to them if they do, it would be a huge test for cricket down there. They've had poor crowds over the journey.
Huge test for a test.
Yeah. They've always been up against C-grade sides, if you like. So this is an Ashes test.
That'd be huge.
If they couldn't fill it 3 out of the 5 days, then question marks would be the foot.
It would be. It would be question mark. But what I'd do is I'd try and allow people travelling from Melbourne down to Tassie to make it a really big corporate event. I mean, I'd be trying to sell it that way as well. I don't think you necessarily have to sell it to all Tasmanian people. I mean, make it accessible to people that can travel from Melbourne straight down there in an hour flight and make it a test match like they do in Adelaide. A lot of people travel to Adelaide to go and watch it. I mean, a lot of country people from Victoria could get down to Tasmania and watch it. You know, I think you've got to throw it open to other states as well, not just Tasmania.
Jump on the Spirit. Salamanca will be pumping.
It will be.
You've had a couple of quiet nights there, Jared, after some long boat trips.
Yeah, maybe they could time it with the Sydney to Hobart crew just getting through.
It'd be great. Weather will be beautiful.
Ask you if Alex Carey should have been told he only has 2 test matches? Why wouldn't you say you're in and we're going to back you all the way?
Well, I think they have said that. I think a blanket sort of decision was made that they want to just announce it for the first 2 test matches. But I think in the back of their mind, George Bailey's indicated that he's loyal. I think Justin Langer's loyal. I think they've made the right decision. Yep. I reckon that's spot on that they've picked him. I think he could turn into a really, really good player. I mean, I'm not sure if he's the best keeper in the country at the moment, but certainly Gilly came through that scenario and did a really good job. So I think they've done that in the back of his mind, mate. I'd be surprised if they changed it, even if he didn't start that well.
So just before we let you go, what's our weakness? If England's main weakness is depth in the middle order, what do you see as ours?
Well, I think our weakness is the top of the order. I think probably 1 and 2. We're not sure about Dave Warner, how he's going. And I think also our 5 is a bit of a problem. So I think our batting is an issue. I think it's a situation where I think both countries' of batting is not strong. But that's our issue. Our batting's the issue. Our bowling's fine. We'll knock over England. No, don't worry about that. We need to get runs out of the top order, which would be 1 and 2. We need to get runs out of our number 5 as well. That'll be the crucial problem. We're not going to go well in this test series where we're not getting enough runs in the first innings. If we get runs in the first innings, then that'll look after itself. But those are the pressure points for us.
Brendan, thanks so much for coming on. Looking forward to watching you on Fox throughout the Ashes.
Good on you, boys. Thanks.
Brendan Julian there from Fox Cricket. So that's interesting, Jared. Like, listening to that, you wouldn't be back in the draw unless, you know, the first test there's rain.
Well, rain is the reason. I mean,
no, I know, but I'm saying drawn test matches that have 5 days of good weather, I don't know if we're going to see many.
Well, if both sides are weak in the batting department
and fairly strong in bowling,
it's going to be a result each time. Save the weather.
As we go to the break, it's time for news headlines with Tony Tardio. Welcome back to Sports Day. Jared, did you see the vision of Jake Lever at Melbourne training today? The club's saying he fainted. It sort of looks like he was on his haunches.
Yeah, he sort of collapsed
after a run, and then he sort of just decided, I'm going to lie down. And the medicos sort of attended to him for about 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the official line from a club spokesperson is that he went too hard too early.
Okay. Well, let's hope there's a little bit left in the tank.
What would that be down to, Dr.
No Ewing? Idea. No, they had a big weekend scoop.
Get on the beers.
Oh, Zoe.
That's unfair.
That is unbelievable.
That's very unfair. Just going back to the Tassie test, I'm looking at the crowds, the biggest crowds. I've done a lot of games. I reckon I've done 30 games at down at Bellerive Oval.
Right, you love Hobart.
And I've seen a number of good crowds. I haven't seen a cracking crowd, but the biggest crowds.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a ripper.
So what does it hold? 20,000.
Holds 20.
Yeah.
In 2016, there was a almost full for North Melbourne and Richmond.
I was at that game. It was about 2 degrees on a Friday night.
2015, similar, North Melbourne and Richmond. You know, we're talking 17,500, nearly 18,000.
Yeah, it's a great crowd.
But for cricket, the only decent crowds, and they're really good crowds, have been BBL or One Day International, sort of 16,000 to 18,000.
So the record, when the Hurricanes are playing.
Yeah, the record is 18,149. That's post the Ricky Ponting stand being built. That was in 2016. So you'd want to be getting your 16,000 to 18,000 2 or 3 days in a row to justify the test against England. That one against South Africa, that doesn't feature, and that was 2016.
The Tyre Power Sports Update there for Tyre Power. Summer Scorcher Sale is now on. Formula One title race. Well, she's going down to the wire. Peter Windsor is going to join us from Europe next.
Into the first corner for
Verstappen has to bail out. Lewis Hamilton has to bail out. Verstappen ends that sequence with a bigger lead over Lewis Hamilton.
Crazy.
Oh. Oh, they touched and they've collided. Max Verstappen and Lewis Hamilton. How much damage on Hamilton's Mercedes? What has happened there? Hamilton is going to give us level pegging in the championship as he comes home to win the first Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. It's Hamilton and Mercedes on top.
Yes, welcome back to Sports Day. It was all happening at the Saudi Arabia Grand Prix. It means we go into Abu Dhabi next week, all tied up at the top. Hamilton won, Max Verstappen second. And as Max Verstappen stormed off
the podium,
Jared refused to celebrate. I loved the words of the commentator, David Croft, and I might use them here. If the gloves weren't off now, they certainly are now. If they weren't off before, they certainly are now. Peter Windsor is a man that a lot of our listeners will know. He's a Formula One reporter. He was, of course, the former boss of Williams. He was their team manager, and he joins us live to speak about what was, Peter, a crazy weekend in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, crazy weekend. I think we all thought it was going to be pretty much a pressure cooker, but I don't think anybody really anticipated what we saw yesterday. It was just stunning.
Peter, can you apportion blame in this collision, or is it simply down to a miscommunication on many parties?
I think had Lewis known that he was going to be inheriting the lead and the Max was going to move over for him, I think probably he would have been, you know, out of the, he wouldn't have been right behind him and he would have been on the other side of the road and the collision wouldn't have happened. Having said that, in my mind, there's no excuse for braking on a straight line, regardless of the situation anywhere in the world, you know, in a road car, let alone in a racing car. And I think there was a bit of, you know, we saw it in Max's driving all day, which was, you know, if we both get taken out here or something happens, the bigger loser is going to be Lewis, because at that point, Max, of course, was ahead on points. So I think that coloured Max's driving, and I think that was unfortunate. A lot of people would say, wow, wasn't it brilliant? But, you know, the bottom line is he was over the top, I think, in a couple of areas. And that was because of the point situation, I think. And, you know, if Lewis had ended up not finishing that race and Max had limped home in third or fourth, that would have been a great result for Max, of course.
Can I ask you about the qualities, the capabilities of both drivers? Hamilton drives in the Mercedes, the AMG engine. Verstappen, the Red Bull with the Honda engine. If Hamilton was racing in the Red Bull and Verstappen was racing in the Mercedes, would it be as even?
Oh yeah, it would be very even. I mean, these two guys, I put Charles Leclerc somewhere near them, and maybe Lando Norris not that far away. But I think these two guys are the best guys in the world right now. And regardless of, you know, what you may say about test drivers or having the best car, you know, a driver creates a great racing car if he's a great racing driver, and that's what we've seen with both of them. And you're going to look at, say, Sergio Perez or Valtteri Bottas to see what would happen if they didn't have frontline drivers in those cars. And I think if they swapped, it would be very similar. But I think the one thing that showed up yesterday was Lewis has this ability also of staying out of trouble, of protecting his world, if you like. And I don't think Max has that. Maybe he will get it in the future, but this is something that Lewis was superb yesterday in not getting hit by Max or Esteban Ocon or anybody else around him. And he still had a car. Admittedly, it was pretty battle scarred, but he still had a car with which he could set fastest lap and win the race. And with all the stuff going on, I thought that was outstanding. That was sort of Niki Lauda against Alan Prost. You know, that was a brilliant bit of driving by Lewis. And he was aggressive when he needed to be aggressive as well.
So if you're back in your former role in the sport as the team manager for Williams and both drivers were available and you needed somebody to head up your team, would you take Hamilton?
Oh, yeah. I would have taken Hamilton even before McLaren did. When he had half a chance of doing half a season in 2006, I would have put him in the car. And they didn't at that point. But, I mean, the guy, even in Formula 3, Formula 2, it was very clear he was outstanding. He was superb. I think I think Max comes from a completely different background. He's got quite an aggressive father. He's got Helmut Marko of Red Bull around him. And I think those two guys probably would have been winding up Max quite a lot going into this race right. of, you know, Max, this is your chance. You can do it here. You know, if Lewis doesn't finish, yeah. there would have been a bit of that. And you know, that's, and Lewis isn't open to that sort of thing. He just does his own racing. You know, he's got an incredible racing brain. Incredible. You know, he's just got this feel for making everything very simple and not allowing the occasion to get on top of him. And given his status, you know, his global status, that's pretty impressive. You know, you're talking Roger Federer type
yep.
ability here to, you know, just to remain the athlete and not be affected by it all.
I'm sure if you asked Max, Jared, what his thoughts on the inaugural track at Saudi Arabia was, he probably wouldn't get a nice answer. But what did you make of it? Did you think the other drivers liked it? The first time we've seen the track, it had more turns than anything we've seen before.
Yeah, no, I think it was a great circuit in the sense that it had a lot of fast corners. And that's when and most drivers, if you ask them about that track, will say, yeah, fabulous circuit. We loved it because all good racing drivers love fast corners. Mm. They don't want Mickey Mouse slow corners with lots of chicanes. And that's what that circuit gave them. What it also brought, of course, because it's a sort of street track in a way, there was a lot of concrete walls and a lot of blind entries. And because of the shape of the lap, there was and the condition of the tires in qualifying particularly, everybody had to do a lot of slow laps to get the tire temperatures really well balanced. And because of that, it was unbelievably dangerous in terms of these blind corners and suddenly finding a slow car in the middle of the road. And I think all the drivers, when the dust settles, will be thinking, yeah, you know, as much as this track is fun to drive on your own out there, just enjoying the thrill of being in a racing car, the reality is when you put 20 cars in there, half of which are doing 3 miles an hour, it is a seriously dangerous circuit. And I think that's something that, you know, will always colour this track.
One final one, if you would, Peter, just on our local guy, Daniel Ricciardo. Where do you see him at in his career?
Well, I think he's got a good bank account now, which is good. So yeah. In theory, he should sleep well at night. You know, that you've got to assume that's one of the reasons he left Red Bull and went to Renault. He got a large chunk of money. I mean, I think that to do that, what he did, to leave a race-winning team, you know, race in, race out. You know, if you're driving for Red Bull, you got half a chance of winning the Grand Prix. To leave that situation to go to Renault proactively, and he made that decision himself. You know, is a big thing to do if you haven't yet won a world championship.
Yep.
And that's what he's done. And I think that it's not the psychological effect of that. It is the actual effect of that. Mm. And to then go to a team where he hasn't got a chance of winning a Grand Prix, i.e. Renault, but he's got a lot of money, is a completely different situation for him as a racing driver. He could walk around thinking, well, I haven't got to beat Max Verstappen every day, but equally, he hasn't got a chance of winning the Grand Prix either. And now he's at McLaren. I think he went to McLaren thinking, now I can be Danny Ricciardo again. I've got that out of my system. I'm a race driver. It's going to be brilliant to be at McLaren, get the team around me. And of course, what he never really factored in was how quick Lando Norris is. And Lando had out-qualified Carlos Sainz both years. And he's a Lewis-type driver in many ways. He's got very soft edges to his driving. He's really, really good, natively good. And I don't think that into Daniel's kind of thinking too much. Mm. And I think he's pretty shocked at how good Lando is. And of course, when your teammate is quicker than you or slightly quicker ever, it's always annoying. And that, you know, he's in that situation now. So answer to your question, I think, you know, he's in a good home. I think they all love him there. And he's a great guy. Everybody in Formula One loves Daniel. And they all want to see him do well. And Monza was a brilliant thing. But in terms of him becoming a Lewis Hamilton or a Max Verstappen, life is very difficult for him because if that McLaren really becomes a championship winner, you know, Lando Norris is going to take big advantage of it.
Peter, great to have you on. Appreciate your time.
Yeah. All right, mate. Great to talk to you.
Terrific.
Peter Windsor there, Formula One reporter, former boss of Williams. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Sports Day. Sam Kerr, what an unbelievable performance from her. In the FA Cup final, Chelsea versus Arsenal.
Now one for Kerr to chase up against Beattie. She's got the pace to get there first. Wooden Moy rather. Can she find room for a shot this time, Kerr? She has! Oh, and it's crept in! Finally for Sam Kerr! So that's Kerr going. She's onside as well here, Sam Kerr. Oh, my word! What an unbelievable goal from Sam Kerr!
Oh, my word, indeed. That chip, the second goal, was something you would only see from a very, very small portion of players, Jared. I mean, that was David Beckham, you know, Andrei Shevchenko sort of stuff. I think that there's a fair argument that she may go down as our greatest ever soccer player. She's the best player in the world right now. She's in Bosnic, Schwarzer, Kjul, Viduka territory for mine.
Finish the show with an editorial. I like it, Scoop. Going to be a great day tomorrow. We're back. Wind is back.
Already 7 o'clock. 16 degrees tomorrow.
16
Summer
degrees.
Going well. See you tomorrow on Sports Day.
Interesting answer on Daniel Ricciardo.
Very. Thank you for listening to Sports Day. We're here for the good people from Red Energy and also Wilson Homes. Big hour coming up. We're just about to talk about the absolute chaos from the F1 Grand Prix a little earlier. Whew. What was going on in Saudi Arabia was one of the strangest things that I have ever seen in sport, it must be said. We'll get to that. We'll talk about...
Are you prepared to apportion blame? Because it seems to be born of...
They were both pretty bad.
It seems to be born on a miscommunication. So maybe there isn't any blame.
Well, I don't want to apportion blame just quite yet. We'll talk about it in a second. We're also going to chat to Andrew Westacott, the boss of the Melbourne Grand Prix. And we're going to chat to Frank Panisi, who, Jared, a lot of people have been waiting to hear from.
Yes, I have.
With everything going on with that footy club, particularly Brandon Smith and his comments on a podcast. I said, podcasts are...
They're a lethal trap podcast. You go in, you're nice and relaxed, you're talking to blokes you're not normally with.
Did you listen to Tommy Elliott today?
No.
Well, because we find the whole podcast thing in sport quite interesting for exactly what we went through with Brandon Smith. It seems like our Premier, Daniel Andrews, has also got himself into, not hot water, not the same as Smith, but he was criticised quite harshly by Tom today for, you know,
and rightly so.
Never goes on 3RW.
And calling it a triumph. Goodness me. Imagine the bloke who's on the bottom of the ladder, the coach of the bottom team, calling it a triumph.
And then going on a left-leaning podcast. And, you know, the argument is, Tom's argument was that he doesn't get the same...
pushback on questions.
Veracity of questions.
So when he said he'd made a couple of mistakes, there was no, well, what were those mistakes?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the Premier's argument would be that he's done a press conference every day for the last 2 years.
Answered any questions.
Sometimes people don't have the opportunity to ask questions. Anyway, we'll steer clear of politics.
Oh, we don't do politics.
Let's talk about Saudi Arabia and what happened over the weekend.
Into the first corner. Verstappen has to bail out. Lewis Hamilton has to bail out. Verstappen ends that sequence with a bigger lead over Lewis Hamilton.
Crazy.
Oh, they've touched and they've collided. Max Verstappen and Lewis Hamilton. How much damage on Hamilton's Mercedes? What has happened there? Hamilton is going to give us level pegging in the championship as he comes home to win the first Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. It's Hamilton and Mercedes on top.
Whew. Amazing finishes, and the beauty is that when we head into the final Grand Prix, it's neck and neck. It's
On the same amount of points.
Exactly.
It just couldn't be a better script heading to, I think it's Abu Dhabi, isn't it, the last race. But Saudi Arabia, it was mayhem. Jared, I mean, whether you like the sport or not, you couldn't help watching that. It went for 2 hours and 8 minutes. Mm. The entertainment. It had the two guys running into each other. I understand. It had Verstappen walking off the podium before celebrating.
Yeah.
I mean, I like Max Verstappen as an athlete, but that's poor sportsmanship as far as I'm concerned. You don't do that. Like, you can be as pissed off as you want to be, but ultimately, it's like footy. Once the siren goes, you shake hands, you walk off.
Yeah.
No?
Well... there's been a lot of bad blood in this whole scenario.
The race is over, Max. Like, you storming off the podium before celebrating doesn't help anyone, mate.
If Max thinks the other bloke has deliberately sought to create a collision.
Oh, I can't believe you're of this opinion. It doesn't matter in the end. Once the race is over, you can't change it.
No. You can't change it. We all know that. But it doesn't mean you have to respect the other bloke.
Dan Ricciardo finished fifth.
If everyone's played within the rules, and even, you know, just on the other side of the spirit of the rules, fine. But if you think he's been outrageously unfair, and I'm not saying he has, but, you know, if that's what he thinks, well, I'm not surprised. I mean, they're both hotheads, and it all goes well for the next race.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily Team Lewis, by the way. But, I mean, if you want to talk about specifics, on lap 37, when Hamilton tried to go around Verstappen and Verstappen took his line, that's when they clipped. Well, certainly wasn't all Lewis's fault, my opinion anyway. We'll talk to Andrew Westacott about it. It's just the sport has never been juicier for me, and I love that.
What about the F1, the big one yesterday? I watched it for about 15 laps.
That's what we're talking about.
I'm talking about the mountain.
Oh, Bathurst.
Bathurst.
Yeah, I can't get around the V8s.
Well, I used to love the V8s because
used to be big.
Yeah, but like no one passed anybody.
Yeah,
there was an issue with tyres and with petrol and et cetera, but no, it didn't quite get me yesterday, I'm afraid.
Bit of footy. Scott Pendlebury to miss the final 2 weeks of pre-season. He's got that lower leg injury. It's a refracture they're talking about.
Can I just go back to, I think, what's missing?
Yeah.
The old Ford-Holden rivalry.
Oh, yeah.
Was probably underpinned. You had Brocky and Moffat.
Mm-hmm.
And these were household names. Now, as much as they're probably still big names within racing, I don't think the guys at the top of the leaders board have transcended the sport.
Well, I think, I think that they can be.
I'm sure they can be, but...
But it's a little bit like the Big Bash. It's, if you don't actually tell people it's on and tell people the stories of the people in the sport, then people aren't going to care. That's...
Well, that's true, but, I mean, the Bathurst is on. It's an iconic race. I've always watched it.
It used to be.
Well, I still think it is. It used to be the weekend after the grand final, though. So,
do you think that Bathurst is still iconic?
I do. Jeez. Yeah. Well, it's because it's got history. I mean, it's like anything with history. It's iconic.
Mm.
But at this stage, it's lost a bit of its chutzpah.
Chutzpah.
Because it's, you know, the tribal elements, and maybe there are other tribes that I just haven't caught up with. Because, as I said, I only tuned in for about a dozen laps. And I was wondering, why has it moved?
Mm.
Why has it moved? Time on the calendar.
I'm not sure.
Because I'm sure it was always the week after the grand final.
We can ask Westy when we speak to him. Jake Lever sent a little scare through the Melbourne camp. He collapsed after a running session today.
Did he?
Club said he fainted. He had to be attended to for 20 minutes.
It was probably just the heat, wasn't it?
Club spokesperson said that he went too hard too early in the running drill.
Went too hard too early last night or went too hard too early today?
I think it was today. So, I don't think it was a hungover collapse.
You sure? Because they had the big day yesterday. They would have had the celebration.
During they re-celebrated last night?
Absolute certainties, I would have thought.
$1.15?
Oh.
Okay.
And then you wake up and you've got a fairly warm day, but...
Anyway. Couple of headlines that we spoke about a lot in the first hour. The Biden administration now expecting to announce a diplomatic boycott of Beijing.
Can I just quote Mike Williamson? Mm. I tipped this.
You did tip this. And Cricket Australia, which you also tipped, confirming that the fifth test won't be staged in Perth. Emperor's had a really tough few days.
Well, he tried to, you know, jump before he was pushed. And
then they tried to swap it with Adelaide.
I didn't mind that move the Emperor, as I said earlier.
I minded it.
I thought it was quite creative.
I thought it was rubbish. And as we mentioned in the first hour, to go over Sam Kerr. So Chelsea, when the women's FA Cup, they beat Arsenal 3-0. She scored two of the goals, Jared. One of them, her second one, a chip over the goalkeeper from close range, was unbelievable. I reckon there's an argument right here, right now, that she's on the podium for our greatest ever soccer players.
Well, she'd have to be, wouldn't she?
Yeah, well, she's still got a lot of her career left. I mean...
Yeah, if we can add a World Cup victory... And that may be beyond us because of the size of our population, but we're not that far off as we speak.
She'd have to be in the conversation with Bosnich, Schwarzer, Kuhl and Viduka. And then throw Kerr in. I think those five you'd pick your best from.
Not enough. Wouldn't like the comment, Scoop, to be honest.
No, that's fair enough. And as we talked about just a little bit earlier,
I think what you're saying is she's clearly our best female soccer player.
Mm-hmm.
She's at the top of the...
I think she's the best player in the world currently.
Well...
In women's soccer. So in women's soccer.
We've never had anybody even close to be the best player in the world
in the top 10. No. And the Melbourne Stars, absolutely embarrassed in their BBL opener.
You put the Moz on D. Hussey.
I did. So the Sixers made 214. We got bowled out for 61. Now I know Marcus Stoinis was laid out, but I'm not sure he would have made up the difference. That's a... Big loss.
It's a big loss. Yeah, but it can happen early in the piece. But what we need to do, and I've got something here that I'm going to pass by you.
Previous low score record was 99, by the way.
Yeah,
they didn't even get 2. Okay.
So you've got the collie wobbles. He had the Koenig curse. And the collie wobbles was this thing that hung over Collingwood for year and decade after decade.
Yeah.
Decades. Is it the staff, right? Because the Stars have just, they've been there, thereabouts, every year for 11 years. Got to the grand final a number of times, fallen over.
Was it twice? Yeah.
Something's got to change. We've got to break the staff right.
Yeah. I just, it doesn't grab me.
Okay, staff right doesn't grab you? Okay, we'll move on.
No. The name is fine.
Yeah.
I'm saying I don't yearn for the Melbourne Stars Premiership like I yearn for the end of Melbourne's drought.
Well, possibly, but it's still a very young competition. So
true.
But when you consider how powerful they've been and you consider some of the all-time great cricketers that have played for that club.
And the people behind it, like Eddie Maguire.
For not to have won a title.
Yeah.
And to have been there, and even for the Renegades to beat them in a grand final when they were in a winning position. It's starting to grow. It's starting to grow collie wobble-esque.
Andrew Westacott is the boss of the Australian Grand Prix. He's going to join us next on Sports Day. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy, Canstar's most trusted energy retailer nationally for 2021. And for Wilson Homes, you can enjoy the Tassie summer in your brand new Wilson home. It was in your home, probably on the couch late at night, if it was me. Might not have been.
Was it late at night or early in the morning?
Well, same thing.
Yeah, true.
To see that the two Titans, the heavyweights, the hateful heavyweights of Max Verstappen and Lewis Hamilton, go toe-to-toe in one of the more ridiculous 2 hours of sport, Jared, that I can remember, to be honest.
Well, it certainly got the whole world talking, whether it's good or bad. The focus is going to be extreme
in Abu Dhabi.
When we talk about Abu Dhabi next week. And to talk about it, that and the other element of a big weekend of motorsport, that is the Bathurst 1000, which was run and won over the weekend. Andrew Westacott joins us, the Australian Grand Prix host and boss, I should say. Welcome to you, Westy. No doubt you stood up, stayed up and had a couple of beers and welcomed the sun up as the two men went head-to-head or tail-to-head.
Just what you have to do on a school day from a work point of view. No, I'll admit in front of all the viewers and the listeners as they are, I've pushed record and but I've looked at every highlight and lots of other things, and also really excited about Oscar Piastri, who in that mix, I reckon, is going to become world champion next week, along with, is it Lewis Hamilton or Max Verstappen? Gosh.
Well, I was very excited to see the Brighton boy Oscar having a huge win in the F2, won the feature race as well as one of the two earlier sprint races. And clearly he's going to get the title. So therein lies all Massive. The work he's done up and down my street going way too fast. But he's had to hone his skills somewhere.
So someone was telling me, Jared, that you were, in fact, giving him advice in the back streets of Brighton.
No, I wasn't doing that.
Right.
I was giving
him... Because you do have a bit of a lead foot from time to time.
I was actually...
The Nick Theodos.
I was giving him some creative advice, but it wasn't technical. It was more abusive.
No, the great thing about a young guy like Oscar, who won Formula 3 last year and is on the cusp of Formula 2, he'd be doing all that speed work on a simulator and certainly not on the streets. But he'll come to Melbourne next year with the Alpine team as a reserve driver, and he will be back-to-back champion in F3 and F2, and he joins Charles Leclerc and George Russell in that sort of calibre, and nothing is going to stop him because of the sort of the mathematics, albeit there is a mathematical possibility, but it's just sort of so infinitesimally small. But unlike the F1 game, wow.
Jared, do you remember, it must have been a long time ago now, when Lewis Hamilton was just coming onto the scene, didn't he get pulled over for doing burnouts in the back streets of Melbourne late one night before Westy, is that right?
I wouldn't know that, but Andrew would. Westy, did you give him a fine for burnouts?
I can remember Lewis being in an office where Lewis had to face a little bit of discipline from the bosses of Formula One because of an indiscretion coming out into Fitzroy Street. But he learned his lesson like many, many youngsters. And Lewis is now actually a global ambassador for motorsport road safety. And back, I think it was about 2008, 2009, he did have an indiscretion for a second or two, but, you know, he took it for granted and he shouldn't have done that on the Victorian roads. But he's learned the error of his ways.
Particularly not Fitzroy Street, Jared.
No, that's a bad place
to do it. You go 1 kilometre over the speed limit, Fitzroy Street. You get done by about 6 cameras before you get out of St Kilda.
Oh, they cannot find you enough over there. Max and Lewis, half the world is divided on who was right and who was wrong. Is it a possibility that they were both right and both wrong at the same time? Because it does appear as if it was all miscommunication, as many of the world's best arguments are.
Yeah, and you've got a group of very experienced FIA stewards who look at steering wheel angles and telemetry, and when they push the brake and the throttle and everything like that, they decided to keep things moving. And wow, what a finale we've got in Abu Dhabi.
No, you won't get away with it that quickly. We need to know, was there any fault? I mean, ultimately, they're all saying, oh, I didn't know. I thought he said this. I thought he said that. I shouldn't have pressed the brakes. I thought he was moving over so he could pass. Ultimately, is there any blame to be shedded anywhere?
The words that are commonly used in this situation is it's a racing incident.
Right. And, who caused
it? I think the result stands. I think Lewis, I've got to see it all tonight. I've only seen a few of the highlights. I can't actually form a learned and considered view other than to say what it does is, given that they're even Stevens coming into Abu Dhabi, it's going to put it all on the line. And you'd have to favour the rocket ship that is Lewis Hamilton at the moment based on what he's done over the last 3 or 4 races. But, I don't actually know who wins on a countback if they're both taken out by some dastardly displays on turn one or something.
Daniel Ricciardo comes through, cleans them both up. That'd be a good result.
Well, yeah, it's not good for your reputation on an ongoing basis, is it? But Daniel did have a great
fifth.
I stand corrected. And but, when it comes down to the wire, what it means is that we're 4 months away from our event. There's, and also we're 4 events away. You've got Abu Dhabi, Bahrain, Saudi Arabia again, and back to us on the 10th of April. So, gee, it does promise to be something special in Melbourne, and ticket sales are an indicator that it's actually everyone's thinking the same way.
Can I ask you, as we move on to another issue, Bathurst? I mean, Bathurst has always been an iconic race for me. I've grown up, gone through the heady days, and they don't appear to be as heady at this stage. I mean, tell me if this is unfair, but we have yet to recover from the decimation of the Ford Holden rivalry, the Moffat, Dick Johnson, Peter Brock dominance. Those three guys all transcended the sport, and there were others, Craig Lowndes, etc., through the years. But this current generation, I'm not sure they've transcended the sport, and there didn't appear to be a huge turn up at Bathurst yesterday. Am I being unkind here, or are there reasons why? Is it COVID related, or has the sport just lost a little bit of its grip on the wider public, not so much the motorsport public?
You gave me the lead in line. I think you're being a little bit harsh, Jared, because I think what Mostert did from a drive point of view was exceptional. They were the fastest car across the whole weekend in the practice sessions. Mm. He suffered some grief with a split tyre, as you would have seen on the coverage. And he's got with the peroxided hair and with Lee Holdsworth, and you did have James Moffat as Alan's son on the second step of the podium as well. I thought that was terrific. There's a new breed of drivers with Wind Cup retiring and Lowndes being, for instance, a co-driver in one of them. I think they are approaching a new era, and they're going to be different cars, and the designs of the next generation of cars are really exciting to see. They're good-looking, sexy-looking cars, and I think they're actually going to be hitting the track in 2023. So we won't see him other than from a display point of view in 22. But
I think you're actually agreeing with me, Andrew. I mean, no one's decrying the brilliant performance of the winner. I mean, he was clearly outstanding. But I looked into the crowds and there wasn't it wasn't jam-packed like it normally is. Now, I'm not sure why.
That's all COVID-related, I reckon. I mean,
COVID only?
I have to think so. And,
do you think, though, the sport has lost something because of the lack of rivalry between teams? Like the Holden Ford rivalry was as good as the All Blacks Australia rivalry.
Yes, it was. And I don't know whether that means I'm contradicting myself again. But I do think that there's still rivalries across the teams. And, the drivers are creating that sort of level of rivalry. And there's a new era of drivers. I thought what was on the line between Chas Mostert and Shane Van Gisbergen was pretty exceptional yesterday afternoon, and they're going to be a different breed of drivers who are going to be probably forging their own history.
Westy, on the COVID, on the COVID related nature that you were talking about, I assume, you know, barring unforeseen setbacks, we can have a full crowd in Melbourne. It's going to be a normal race.
Yeah, you bet it is. And I spent a couple hours today with our engineering team looking at where we can put new grandstands and additional bays, because we are selling the grandstands as quickly as we can put them up onto the ticketing systems. And we typically have about 30,000 grandstand seats that we'd sell up to over the course of the whole campaign. Well, we put that 30,000 seats on the market and they're basically sold out. So now what we're doing is working out where we can have some fantastic new locations given the geometry and changes to the circuit. So there's a lot of popularity in motorsport here. Supercars is a support category, but gee, when you look at Netflix and Lewis and Max Verstappen, and you know, there's 15 drivers next year in Melbourne who are driving for different teams compared to when they last raced in Melbourne in 2019, and five of them have never driven the circuit at all. So it does promise to be really, really exciting.
See, why would you take it to Sydney, Jared? I mean, they're selling tickets quicker than they can print them here.
Well, that's up to Andrew to fight off the Sydney.
Well, no, they just couldn't.
Sydney couldn't Pirates. Sydney. With the grandstand, are we able to sit next to each other or are we distanced?
No, next to each other. And okay. as Sam said, barring anything unforeseen, and we're not planning for the unforeseen at the moment, we're selling fully packed grandstands, you know, one person in one seat, none of the 50%, 75% scenarios that we were legitimately having to go through when we were looking at March and November scenarios. So it's going to be the full configuration of suites and grandstands and viewing locations and additional areas with super screens and social zones and so on. So it really does promise to be a party atmosphere and something we're really, really keen to introduce new people to the sport of.
The Sydney Raiders, have they paid you the respect of actually giving you a call and just alerting you to the fact that they're trying to cut your lunch?
No, I think they... Premier Dom Perignon, I think, that does that via the press. And
Perignon.
I think what we're
Perignon
seeing...
with Perignon. That's a wine, isn't it, or a champagne? Anyway, he's very bubbly at this stage.
They are, and it's major events are an important part and a very serious part of the state's economy. And you know, we've got a strong relationship with Formula One. The government's got a strong relationship with Formula One, and you know, the commitment is there as it always is to look to the future. And one of the things we did in conjunction with the guys at Formula One was design and institute the $20 million worth of circuit changes, which are going to be unveiled for next year's event. And you don't do that just for a one-off basis. You do that because you've both got an eye to the future, and that eye to the future is well and truly, you know, there.
Did you research the ammonia fuel discussion that we had? I did give you the share. Since I gave you the tip on that, it's gone from 16.5 cents to 14.5. So I hope you didn't invest.
No, but what I did do, Jared, is that the renewable fuels topic is broad. The hybrid engine, which powers Formula One and been in place since 2014, as I think I did say on that night, is the most efficient power unit in the world. And you know, it might be ammonia, or it might be other forms of renewable fuels, and if it's as good as you say, then the companies that Formula One is working with will make sure it features. But they're looking at renewability because obviously a sustainable sport needs to include a really good strong eye on renewable fuels, because you know 90%+ of the cars on the roads are hybrid or non-electric, and electrification is definitely one of those solutions for the future. But there's also other solutions for the future of mobility, and what we've got to do is, even in that transitionary phase, which is over decades, make sure that we've got efficient fuel cells and efficient hybrid engines, and that's what Formula One is doing. So you know, they're leading the charge, and it's really, really good for the environment and the sport.
I still think ammonia sort of suits the the image of Formula One, you know, you've got to be able to pump something in. You just don't want to have to plug a battery in if you're talking Formula One. So let's hope this fuel that you're so keen on and heavily invested in makes it to the final stages of production. But nevertheless, Andrew, great to catch up. A huge weekend in motorsport, and it's going to be even bigger next week.
Yeah, next week's the finale for not only Verstappen and Hamilton, but also Oscar Piastri. And let's also give a plug for Mick Doohan's son, Jack Doohan, who actually made it into Formula 2 last weekend, and he finished fifth in his second race, and I thought that was pretty spectacular. So things are bright on the future of young Aussie drivers who are going to be pushing Daniel Ricciardo in future years.
They certainly are. Good on you, Westy. Andrew Westacott there, the boss of the Australian Grand Prix. You're only, as he said, three more races away from it coming to Melbourne. Do you think Westy was being deliberately mischievous when he referred to Dominic Perrottet as Dominic Perignon?
I didn't know whether he was having a barb at him. It was good, though. I liked it.
Because
we've been looking for something. We've got the emperor, we've got the cowboy, we've got the dictator.
Because, I've made up my mind. It was definitely deliberate.
Was it a barb?
Well, because his name is Dom Perrottet.
Yeah.
He's then gone with Dom Perignon, which, for those who don't like their wine, is probably, I would say, the most famous champagne in the world.
Good enough. I liked it, though. It's good from Westy.
I think it's 100 out of 100, and yeah. I don't think I'll ever be referring to the New South Wales Premier as anything other than Dom Perignon.
I like it.
More Sports Day, and we're going to get a bit serious with the boss of the Melbourne Storm, Frank Panisi. He's going to join us next. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy, Cairnsar's most trusted energy retailer nationally, and for Wilson Homes. You can enjoy the Tassie summer in your brand new Wilson home. Jared Healy and Sam McClure with you. About to be joined by a man who's been a regular on this show for a long, long time. Fair to say, though, Jared, a bit has happened the Melbourne Storm in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, they've been in the trenches. They've been copping a fair old pounding and plenty of gratuitous advice from the east, the west, the north and south of the country. Frank Panisi is the man who's receiving all that and having to deal with many of these problems at the Melbourne Storm. And it's something that we don't associate with the Storm, and that is problems outside of losing a prelim final. But Frank joins us once again. Frank, welcome to you. It's not often we talk negatively when we chat to you, but unfortunately you've had a couple of issues that have put you in the spotlight in the wrong manner.
No, thanks, Jared. Thanks, Sam. We understand that, and it's pretty hard to defend a lot of those things too. I mean, obviously we love when we get all the accolades and all the pats on the back that come our way, and which we've obviously received a fair few over the years, but when it's time not to get the brickbats, we've just got to put the helmets on and take them, and more importantly, got to do something about it going forward.
Yes, and you've always been able to do that, respond with winning, and people have written you off forever. But right now, you've lost three absolute stars, and Brandon Smith, I'm not sure how he's going to perform. He's put himself in the spotlight unnecessarily. I mean, he's really, in my view, put his whole future at the club. And I'm talking short term. I know long term he's not there anyway, but it must have been so close to giving him his marching orders. Have you still settled on the fact that you're going to bring him back into the fold, or has he still got to earn his right to become one of the Storm players again for next year?
Yeah, look, he starts officially back again tomorrow. It's our last group that's start training. We've had the groups come in three. The new player started about a month ago. Our younger group, or our less and more experienced of our 2021 squad, started 2 weeks ago, and then the remainder, which Brandon's part of, starts tomorrow. So it all starts for him tomorrow. They certainly used the word regain. There's, whether you call it respect or trust or whatever the word is, there's obviously some work to be done by Brandon, and only Brandon can do that, not just through words but through actions. So, yeah, he's got some work to do, and it all starts tomorrow for him.
We all make mistakes, and podcasts seem to bring out the worst in a lot of people. They get a bit loose and talking with mates, et cetera, and want to talk it up and have a bit of a joke. But ultimately, you've had to acknowledge what he said, the drinking culture, et cetera. It's, how did you deal with that, and clearly how are you dealing with the public with us now with this allegation of the big drinking culture?
Yeah, look, The podcast as a whole found disappointing, but I found the drinking culture puzzling. I think you only have to look at our record over the last 7 years. We've made seven consecutive prelims. You know, I think four minor premierships, four grand finals, two premierships. We won 19 games on the bounce this year. you don't have those performances over a long period of time if you've got a drinking culture.
Yep.
If you did, I think there'd be a lot of sporting teams in Australia that would be suddenly adopting a drinking culture. So I found those comments puzzling. It's impossible, and I think anyone that's got any type of knowledge of physical performance and you know, the constant use of alcohol, tell you they just don't go together.
Was it personally disappointing for you and Craig, Frank? Because this kid has been one of you for a long, long time and essentially he's thrown you under the bus.
Well, you're disappointed because you care about someone and someone that has contributed enormously to the club. So I think if it was just a bloke that just flew in, flew out, you wouldn't really give too much thought to it. But it's someone that's been here for 5 years, came as a young player, made his debut here and has given his absolute all to the club and really contributed, you know. And so that made it disappointing. And look, I haven't heard the podcast, and those type of podcasts, not my go, to be honest. Not just because of this, they're just not my go, those type of podcasts that are done these days. You know, and people tell me that he did say a lot of good things about the club, which is fantastic. But unfortunately, as I've explained to him,
they don't get publicised.
They're not worried about the 95% good things he said. They'll focus purely on the 5%, and that 5% of things he shouldn't have said, and he regrets saying them now.
How close did you get to sacking him?
Oh, look, that discussion is, you know, obviously there's just been disappointment. There's a lot of speculation going around, crazy speculation over the weekend about swapping and those type of things. Ultimately, we just let it ride, just clear our emotions, and then waited for Brandon to come back. So Brandon, as I said, just arrived back into Melbourne over the weekend, and he starts officially tomorrow, and then we'll have a chat. He's contracted to the club, and, you know, if he really wants to be here and, you know, and he can show that he wants to be here, you know, that this is where his future will be. So, but, you know, as I said, it's easy just having one or two meetings. He's got a shout over a period of time. So, but there was a lot of disappointed people, and thankfully, no more disappointed than himself for the comments that he made.
So are you refuting that you approached West Tigers to do a swap?
We didn't approach. No, we can't. I can guarantee we approached no club. No, like certainly when you're in that position, you become, you know, as we are, as people think you're vulnerable. So obviously you will get potentially other clubs contacted. But yeah, some of the, you know, there's... we just got to take a deep breath. It's been a very, very disappointing week on top of a few other things. So we've just got to take a breath, sit down with the player in person rather than over the phone or by text and have a conversation with him. But, you know, as I said, he's a contracted player and he'll be given an opportunity to show that he really wants to be here.
Given how long you've been involved with this footy club, do you think that the awe of the Melbourne Storm has been impacted by the last few months? Has the gloss gone off the club a little bit? I mean, you've dealt with some pretty serious circumstances. You've had a white powder scandal involving some of your stars, and then one of those stars opens up about, you know, an alleged drinking culture. And he says he was taken out of context. I've listened back. That's what he said. How big an impact do you think, Frank, this has had?
Oh, look, it's something we don't like, and we generally care about the culture. You know, it's been built, you know, cultures aren't built overnight, and built over a season. It takes years and years to build great cultures, and you know, and this has been built over a long period of time. So, you know, there's a lot of people that have been here at a long time. You know, no longer than Craig, and you know, this is my 15th season. We've got a lot of other staff similar that we generally care, and our players as well. I think, you know, they generally care about the culture. So, what you'll find, Sam, is an extremely determined group that have basically, you know, seen that we've taken a whack and it hurts and we care about it. So, you know, whether we've lost our aura, I'm not too sure. All we care about is our culture is restored to where it should be, our high standards and our values that we have. So, we're certainly not throwing the white flag. If anything, I think you're going to see an extremely determined club, not just on the field, because I'm pretty confident on the field, but, you know, it's off the field too. I think that's the most important thing. I think that's the area we've got to improve in lots of areas, and we're determined to get back to where we know we belong.
So on a positive, a couple of new players, in fact, three new players heading to the club and starting training this week, including Xavier Coates, who's a hell of a player.
He's been exceptionally outstanding during pre-season. He's been here a month now, as all the new players have, and he's training incredibly well. He's leading the pace. Nick Meaney, that we signed from the Bulldogs, you know, as a replacement for Nico Hines. Again, he's fitted in really well. And He's a little bit older too, so his experience is quite invaluable. Josh King from the Knights, a player that'll, you know, will play similar to Dale Finucane, and by no means we're even thinking of comparing it to Dale, but he's added some real energy. And we've got a couple of young players, the Torren Wishart that we got midway through the last year, who's joined our squad for that but didn't play. He's probably one of our best at training at the moment. And a young kid called Jack Howarth, who was also in our system last year, but just with COVID, got little opportunities. So he'll they've probably been the standouts. But it's there's what that's, you know, with all the distractions going on, one thing we're really pleased is how the group hasn't been distracted. Their on-field performance has been outstanding. The high standards, as good as I've ever seen it at training. I saw a session on Saturday, which was as tough a session I've seen for a long time. And, you know, they were outstanding. They did everything and beyond. So, yeah, where we are right now, we welcome all the boys back tomorrow. And, you know, so far it's been from an on-field point of view, Jared, it's been a very successful on-field. We just got to fix up the off-field issues.
Well, Frank, I'm not sure we'll talk again on air between now and Christmas, but I'm looking forward to catching up with you at Tommy Ruff's in the next couple of weeks. You've been fantastic for us all year. Good luck and have a great break. All the best.
Thanks, Jared. Thanks, Sam. Thanks for your support during the year. Really appreciate it.
Frank Panisi, the godfather of the Melbourne Storm. Your calls after this.
Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy and for Wilson Homes. Early tonight, we were joined by former Aussie cricketer Brendan Julian, the main man from Fox. It is Ashes Week.
I reckon you will get a result. I mean, if there's a little bit of grass on the pitch and it's sort of swinging around a bit, I reckon the big decision is going to be with Pat Cummins being the bowler and captain now. If he senses a bit of twinge or a bit of tweak in the pitch, he may want to bowl first. I mean, normally, 9 times out of 10, you win the toss, you bat first. That's what batsmen normally do. But I tell you what, if he gets an inkling or there's a delayed start, there's a bit of weather around and it's grassy, you might want to put him in if he wins the toss.
Would you?
Don't know. I'd need to be. You'd make that decision about half an hour before you toss the coin.
As a bowler, would have stuck him. You see a little bit of green grass on that. You'd want to get hold of the new Kookaburra.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Also, I don't reckon it's a bad thing either, because I tell you what, it's up against England's top three, which are pretty ordinary, I reckon. I mean, Joe Root moving down towards the middle of the order is pretty good. Ben Stokes and Josh Butler and Bairstow, but their top order is shabby. So I don't know. I reckon he'll be thinking about it. But what happens is, if they get in there and they bat well on the first day, then you normally cop it as a bowler. But I think it'd be a brave move. Not everyone has always won the toss and batted first. But if there's a bit of grass on it, you might want to do it.
It is a big call for a first-up captain with his first call. If he wins, I reckon he'd almost prefer to lose the toss.
What did Chappelli used to say?
Yeah.
9 times out of 10, you bat. And the 10th time, you think about bowling.
And still bat.
And you still bat.
But don't forget, Chappelli in 1974 always said that. And he bowled first in the first two test matches at the Gabba, then Perth. So, you know, he has got the history.
Selective memory,
first.
Okay.
He can do it. Exactly. Hey,
Brendan, how much has the tide turned from, say, 2 months ago when we were all sitting here thinking, oh, well, this should be a nice, easy roll over 3 or 4-0 against England? A fair bit's changed since then.
Mate, you're absolutely right, mate. I mean, one, we've flicked their captain, so that changes it all around a bit, which I don't necessarily think is going to have a massive impact on the side. Yes, you don't want to lose your captain, I agree, but I don't think I think Ben Stokes coming out to England, I think that has turned it around significantly for England. I think their bowling is really solid with Anderson and Broad. I think their only issue is probably the top three batsmen. But I definitely think we will go on as favourites, but it won't be a walkover. No doubt about that. It'll be a lot closer than what we think.
Did they make the right call with Travis Head over Usman Khawaja?
Look, I think they did. I think they had to give him some sort of opportunity to at least prove himself. I mean, he averages 40 in Test cricket and probably 27 in the last series against England. I don't think he's a lock-in for the whole series, but he will have to bat well. But I think he deserves that run. Uzi has had his chances as well, and he's had his chances to lock in his spot, and he hasn't done that. He's batted well in the Sheffield Shield, so I'm happy with that decision. I don't think, it's a lock-in for the whole five test matches, but certainly for the first two.
Brendan Julian joining us from Fox Cricket ahead of the Ashes. BJ, is Shane Warne's criticism of Mitchell Starc warranted?
Yeah, I think it's a bit tough. I mean, Warney always believes that probably Mitch Starc has not sort of lived up to those expectations. But I'm all for having Mitch Starc in the first test match. I want to see how he's going. I don't think he's bowling that poorly. Yes, I know there are times when he sprays it around and he looks ordinary, but he's that type of bowler. You know, he's that type of bowler that can win you games and then he can go for 60 or 5 overs. So I don't mind that. Being a left armer myself, you cop it a bit if you spray it around. But, you know, if he's on song, he can win you a test match. So I'm happy to see that for the first couple of test matches, no doubt.
Great to hear from Brendan Julian there.
Good operator, Brendan.
Yep, he's been very good in the media for a long time. First test starts on Wednesday. Nice seeing you on this Monday evening, Jared. We will touch base tomorrow.
Yeah, it was interesting to hear from Frank. I mean, I think they've taken a blow, but like the good club they are, they'll move on. And hopefully Brandon Smith puts his best foot forward for another 12 months.
First day of pre-season
tomorrow. And does a hamstring.
No, we don't wish injuries on anyone. We'll see you tomorrow, everyone.